First, so far in 2020, we've had the coronavirus and stay-at-home orders, furloughs, job losses, canceled events, shortages of toilet paper and hand sanitizer, the list goes on. On top of COVID-19, there's been the death of George Floyd and subsequent protests, looting and violence, uncivil conversation. And remember the impeachment of President Trump? That dragged into 2020 as well. And don't forget about the murder hornets. So maybe it's not surprising that Americans are feeling pretty down this year. A new survey shows that just 14% describe themselves as very happy. That's the lowest level in nearly 50 years. And half say they feel isolated at least some of the time. 2 years ago, only 23% said that. So why are we feeling this way and what can we do about it? Sonia Lubomirsky is a distinguished professor and vice chair of psychology at the University of California, Riverside. She's also the author of The Myth of Happiness, What Should Make You Happy But Doesn't, What Shouldn't Make You Happy But Does, and also The How of Happiness, A New Approach to Getting the Life You Want. Sonia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, looking at the news so far this year, Sonia, was it any surprise to you to see this survey showing a spike in unhappiness?
It was a surprise, actually. I mean, yes, if you look at the news, it sounds like we should all be terribly unhappy, but there have been a lot of data sets coming out, and this is the first one that I've seen a drop in happiness. The other data that I've seen coming out sort of from different samples is showing either no difference or even a slight increase. So there you go.
Was this report an outlier, do you think, or did the timing happen to catch a different trend?
You know, it's really hard to say because every survey is different. It's going to have a different sort of, you know, limitations or strengths. It's going to have different samples, different, as you say, different time periods. Then this was late in May, I believe. Is that right?
That's right. That was when this one came out.
Right. I was just looking at a data set before you called me of about 10 to 20,000 people that were taking mood and depression surveys, and they followed them from January to June, both in 2019 and in 2020. And actually, by May, June of 2020, people are no less happy or no more depressed and actually even a little bit better off in 2020. So that's another data set that's showing different results. So it's really, really hard to say. There's nothing wrong necessarily with any of these studies. They're all kind of giving you a slice of the picture, but it's sort of hard to interpret when they're giving different results.
Well, and it can be hard to draw a straight line. And I think some of your writing in the past has found this, a straight line between what's going on in the world and what's going on in our own minds when it comes to happiness. Bad times may make us less happy and may lead us to rethink, you know, what is valuable in life, what does make us happy.
That's exactly right. So sort of our criteria or our threshold for what, you know, gets us to say we're happy might change. My collaborators and I actually have some data ourselves where we looked at the same group of people. This survey, I believe, was different groups of people each time. By the way, there could be self-selection biases, right? So maybe if you're particularly unhappy, you're more likely to say yes to doing the survey, right? So that's another issue with surveys. So we have some data where we followed the same individuals across time, two different samples, and we found that people felt about the same in happiness, and actually a little bit less lonely in one of the samples. And so we thought that doesn't make sense, right? Like we're not able to interact with our friends and family members or even strangers. And how can that make us feel a little bit less lonely? But of course, we're all human and we respond in different ways. And there's a sense of sort of coming together and bonding over disaster. There's a sense of like, I'm going to try to Zoom with all my high school friends now and reconnect virtually. So, you know, the way we respond, of course, really, really matters.
Sonia Lubomirsky is with us, professor of psychology and happiness researcher at the University of California, Riverside. We're talking about happiness in a time of some tough news around the country. So it's hard to measure our aggregate happiness, it sounds like, Sonia, but there's some good news, and you've done a lot of work on this. There's a lot we can do when we reevaluate our own happiness. What are some basic tips you might have for people who do feel overwhelmed by the news? What kind of things can we do to refocus and find some happiness?
Sure. Great question. I should mention that about a third, maybe less, but often 2/3 of people are really resilient, but maybe a third are not so much and actually are having a lot of are really suffering. So for those who are not doing so well, lots and lots of strategies and approaches one can take to maintain happiness or to increase happiness. My own and my colleagues' research focus on two such strategies. One has to do with gratitude, and one has to do with kindness. And both are really, really relevant today, right? So gratitude is basically an antidote to sort of unhappiness. It's sort of focusing on the good things in your life as opposed to focusing on the negative things. Doesn't mean that you don't try to solve problems, but also you sort of think about the silver lining as well. And that's been shown to increase happiness. And then the other one is kindness and sort of supporting other people and reaching out and helping others. Lots and lots of examples during the pandemic of people reaching out and helping their you know, neighbors, their kids' teachers, or, you know, older people, more vulnerable people. But it turns out not only do you make other people happier by helping them, but you also make yourself happier or less sad or less anxious.
Let's talk about gratitude a little bit. I think we all think of gratitude as a pretty good thing to have. Is there a way we can, I don't know, operationalize a little bit to make sure we make time and do some practice of gratitude in our daily lives?
Right. Gratitude is something that you can do. It doesn't have to take a lot of time, right? It can just be throughout the day. You know, whenever you have a negative thought, you might sort of turn your attention to something good in your life. Also, I think a very powerful way to express gratitude is directly to people in your life, because often it is about a person in your life. Maybe it's your mom, maybe it's your best friend, maybe it's a former mentor or teacher who you might write a letter to, an email, a phone call, and express your gratitude for them supporting you. And that really strengthens your connection to that person, makes you feel like the world is a better place, you know, because it has people in it that love you and that help care for you.
On a really basic level, what do we mean by happiness? It could mean, you know, skipping along a field of flowers. It could be a basic sense of contentment. How do we even define happiness in the first place?
It's a great question. I like to define happiness the way that researchers do, which is that happiness really has two components. And I like to think of these components as being happy in your life and being happy with your life. So being happy in your life is basically having, you know, experiencing fairly frequent positive emotions, you know, whether it's enthusiasm or tranquility or curiosity or pride or joy. People happy experience more positive emotions. They're more happy in their life, but you're also more happy with your life, which is having a sense that your life is good, that you're progressing towards your life's goals, that you're satisfied with your life. So really those two components make up happiness.
And is that something we measure when we survey people, or do we just, you know, if I get surveyed in a lot of these things, do people just ask me, am I happy? And I kind of throw my own definition in there.
Well, yes, you do. I mean, people do tend to use their own definitions. We, you know, subjective self-report measures of happiness are really the only thing that we have. There's no thermometer for happiness. So all we can really do is ask people how happy they are. But researchers use, you know, different types of measures. I mean, the kind of large-scale surveys that you're talking about, you often will just have one item, like how happy are you overall or how satisfied you are with your life overall. But we like to, if we have the resources and the time to ask more specific questions about sort of how often do you experience positive emotions, you know, how satisfied are you with your life, you know, asked in five different ways. And that creates a more reliable and valid measure. But you're absolutely right that people do have sort of bring their own definition to mind. I mean, I like to say that most of us, the far majority of us, sort of know whether we're happy or not. You know, it's something that you know, we know it when we see it. So I don't think it's very hard question to answer.
We're talking about happiness in America. One survey shows a growth in unhappiness this year. Others, maybe we're holding steady, but we're talking about what can make us happy, how we can give ourselves a boost if we're not feeling happy these days. Sonia Lubomirsky is with us, psychology professor at the University of California, Riverside. She studies happiness. She's written a lot of books about it. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. How would you describe your overall level of happiness Has 2020 been difficult for you? Has it made you less happy? Are there things you reach for in those times to make you more happy? Have you rethought the things that are valuable in your daily life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about happiness. A new survey from the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago says only 14% of Americans say they're very happy. That would be the lowest level in 48 years. But our guest says other surveys show maybe different trends. Sonia Lubomirsky is helping us understand happiness, what it means, and how we can find it. She's a distinguished professor and vice chair of psychology at the University of California, Riverside. She's the author of multiple books on happiness, including The Myths of Happiness, What Should Make You Happy But Doesn't, What Shouldn't Make You Happy But Does. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How would you describe your overall level of happiness? Has it been tough to be happy given all the news of 2020? Are there things you turn to, big or little, in your daily life, friends, family, gratitude, you name it, a hobby, that make you happy when you need it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller now. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hi.
Hello. Well, while I was listening to you, I was doing a very hard crossword puzzle, and it occurred to me that I am really very happy that Mr. Gutenberg invented the press. I learned to read at age 3. I have never stopped reading. I am totally addicted to the printed word. It is just, I can't even contemplate what life would be like. Mm. And it was for centuries and centuries. Without reading material, I want to read.
Nancy, thank you so much. So, Sonia, Nancy has found the daily activity, it sounds like, that makes her really happy, reading crossword puzzles, that sort of thing. How important is that, just figuring out the little things maybe that make us happy and then making sure we make time for them?
Yeah, I think this is really beautiful, that what Nancy's demonstrating is the importance of gratitude, right? That mm-hmm. Most of us take for granted that we can read and the printed word exists. But also, you know, any kind of activity that can really like draw our attention, engage us, you know, gives us what's called flow, which is when we're so absorbed and engaged in what we're doing that we really can savor, is going to contribute to happiness. For many, many people, it's reading. For other people, it might be listening to music or creating music. It might be doing some kind of physical activity or really engaging in work or other kinds of hobbies, cooking, gardening. So I think having an activity that you really love and that really absorbs your attention is important and can contribute to a lot of happiness.
Nancy, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Sonia, I want to ask you about something I think we've talked to you on the show about in the past, and it's in the subtitle of one of your books. Things that we think are going to make us happy, but don't. What are some of those?
So the things that make us that we think will make us happy or don't are really the kind of the circumstantial changes of our lives that we think are kind of the secret to happiness. So many of us believe that, you know, if only my life would change in X, Y, or Z ways, then I'll be happy. Like when it's like we're waiting for happiness. When I have a baby, then I'll be happy. When I get that job that I want, then I'll be happy. When I move to that city I've always wanted to live in, then I'll be happy. When I lose that weight, then I'll be happy. Now, what the fact is that those kinds of life changes do make people happier, but they don't make us as happy or for as long as we think they will. Because, you know, guess what? The same person in the new job or in the new relationship or after you lose weight, you're still the same person. And so we tend to adapt. It's called hedonic adaptation. And then we tend to go back right to our baseline. Now, it doesn't mean that if our situation is bad, we shouldn't change it, because that can really, really improve our happiness. But a lot of life changes we sort of think are the solution to all of our problems, but they're really not.
How do we break out of that mindset of thinking once I hit that milestone, then I'll be happy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just important to understand that it's not necessarily going to make you happier forever, and to really understand what it is that does make people happy. And that is really what kind of how we behave and how we think in our daily lives. So yes, like if you get that new job and that new job affects how you sort of what you're thinking and doing throughout the day, that and that gives you a lot of challenge and growth and variety and opportunities to meet new people, then that could really make you happy. But if that new job or that new house or whatever that changes is gonna be something that's gonna sort of make you happy temporarily, but then you sort of go back to baseline because it's not gonna really change your life in a way that's gonna be, I guess that's not gonna lead to daily changes, then it's not gonna make you happy forever. So I think the first step is really to sort of understand that a lot of things don't make you happy forever, and then to really change yourself in a way that does. And so, for example, we were talking about helping others before, or feeling grateful for what you have, and those are that's the kind of mindset that can actually improve your happiness sort of on a regular basis.
Sonia Lubomirsky is with us talking about happiness, how we can find it, what are some of the things that can boost our happiness, what are some of the things that get in the way. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something that you turn to, or maybe something you've built into your daily life that helps you become or stay happy? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sonia, I read something that that you had written about introverts, and this is interesting to me as an introvert, that sometimes the best way for an introvert to be happy is to act like an extrovert.
Yes. I mean, that really surprised me as well. So there's a large and robust correlation between extroversion and happiness. So extroverts are happier. Now, I'm a true believer that there's lots of benefits to being, I mean, I am an extrovert, but I have lots of good friends and family members that are introverts, and there's certainly lots of benefits to being an introvert and to really be reflecting and thinking as opposed to just talking all the time like us extroverts do. But we did a study where we asked people for a week to act more extroverted than you normally do, and then for the next week to act more introverted than you normally do, and vice versa. And we found huge, huge effects. So everyone, including the introverts, during the week that they were asked to act more extroverted, felt happier, more positive emotions, more meaning, more flow. And during the introvert week, they felt less happy. So we were surprised at that. I mean, we thought that the introverts would become sort of fatigued, right, with being more social.
Let's go back to our callers now. Kevin is with us in West Central Wisconsin. Kevin, hi.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Kevin?
I'm real fortunate to be living in West Central Wisconsin. It's a beautiful area, and we're all working together against this coronavirus, and it seems to be working. We're staying healthy, so I'm very happy for that.
Kevin, keep staying healthy. Thank you so much for calling. Two things Kevin noted there. He loves the scenery, the landscape, and he loves his feeling of community there. Can you talk a little bit about both of those, Sonia?
Yes, absolutely. Well, community is so important. Feeling like you belong is super important to happiness and just sort of living a fulfilling life. Psychologists call this the need to belong. We all feel like we need to belong somewhere, and it could be our family, it could be our community, it could be, you know, other kinds of groups and organizations. In terms of nature, really interesting research showing that when we're in nature, we feel more relaxed. It's kind of like when we're in this, I mean, I love cities myself. I'm a very urban person, but research shows that when we're in an urban environment, all of those urban sights and sounds, like the billboards and the noise, they kind of take our attention in a way that makes us just stressed out and sort of not, it's hard to relax. And so our mood is not as good. And so studies show that just being, spending more time in nature, even having something on your wall that's a nature scene, makes people a little bit happier, lifts their mood. So I kind of love those findings.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Arlene now in Two Creeks. Arlene, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I wanted to share that I had an experience. I became diabetic and had to lose about roughly 100 to 150 pounds. I managed to do that within 2 years, and not realizing that this change did not only help me take accountability for my actions on the consequences of everything that I did to get to that point where I was very sick. and I had other issues like thyroid issues and things like that, liver issues, and taking control over my health really helped me. I didn't realize that it would make me happy to have all that responsibility and acknowledging that I had to do these things for my health and my life in the future and what kind of life I wanted to have.
Arlene, but I want to jump in because we just have a couple minutes left. But Sonia, it sounds like Arlene was happy not just because she had, you know, lost the weight and became healthier, but because she had focused in on changing her daily routine and her habits.
Yes, I mean, I think the first step, you know, this may sound like a cliche, the first step is really to sort of, to have some perspective, to think about your life and what makes you happy and what makes you unhappy, where you have control over, what you can change. That's the first step. And the second step is to take kind of those baby steps towards that change. It sounds like that's what Arlene did.
Thank you so much for that call, Arlene. Mm-hmm. In just our last minute or so, Sonia, can you leave us a bit of advice just to kind of monitor our happiness, see where we are, and then take steps to fix it?
Sure. Well, I don't think one should monitor their happiness too much because then you kind of get into the, am I happy yet? Am I happy yet? It could actually might make you feel less happy. But I think just like with anything, your weight or the stock market, you don't want to monitor too much, but once in a while, it could be once a month, you know, once every few months. I think it is important to monitor something and measure it, because if you can't measure something, you can't really change it, right? You need to sort of know where you are to be able to know whether you're improving.
Sonia, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Sonia Lubomirsky has been with us. She's a distinguished professor and vice chair of psychology at the University of California, Riverside. She's written multiple books on happiness, including The Myths of Happiness, What Should Make You Happy But Doesn't, What Shouldn't Make You Happy But Does. We talked to her about recent surveys on happiness, the challenges facing us with tough news out there, and what we can do to get and stay happy. Still time for you to share your own thoughts, your experiences, maybe your own advice over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.